Hello, this is Keith, and welcome again to another episode of Data Beats Opinion. I'm here with Brent Weaver from YouGurus. If you don't know who YouGurus is, they are a business school for digital agencies. They have helped, over 1,000 agencies learn how to gain leads, be a better agency, and to grow. Brent, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Really excited to be on your program.
Yeah, I've been on yours twice, I think, at this point.
I have some catching up to do, apparently.
But I always enjoy talking with you, and you bring a wealth of expertise to this space, which is working with agencies and being an agency. You had your own agency for 14 years?
Just over 13 years.
Just over 13.
From 1999 to 2012.
Wow. And now you are teaching other people to do what you did.
Yeah, I think that was the initial kind of premise. I think since then, I've really understood that, you know, growing a coaching and training business is dramatically different than actually the business of running an agency. But So some of it is teaching people like how we ran our business, but also really staying on top of the types of models and frameworks that agencies can use to grow their business through marketing, sales, fulfillment, operations, and all that good stuff.
And do you feel that it's changed? I mean, since 1999, I mean, that's almost a lifetime ago as far as the internet's concerned, right?
Yeah. I mean, if at that time, the digital agency business model, I think, was pretty incomplete. I think people were, you know, businesses realized they needed to have websites, and there were people that knew how to build the websites. But in terms of like, where does the website fit? Is it in the IT department? Is it in the marketing department? Is it like in engineering or software? I think still somewhat depends. But at that time, it was very much like, you know, the IT department like did the website kind of thing. Right. I think nowadays it's become more of a tool of marketers within businesses and understanding how to do all the lead gen and funnels. And it's become more of a business thing than when I was really doing it. It was kind of a geeky tech thing of like, oh, you know how to program, therefore you can make websites, right? Versus right. I think it's really evolved into more of a robust marketing platform with social media, with you know, content, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I remember because 99 is about when I started web design, web development as well. And I remember it was just a designer would come up with something nice and then the coder built it. And then that was pretty much it. It's like, we just need a business card to say that we exist on this internet web thing because no one knew how to monetize it, right? And it was very difficult for everyone.
Yeah. It was the days of people getting paid 50 grand for a 5-page website, which doesn't happen as often anymore.
Yeah. Now you just like sign up for lead pages or something and get a 5-page website. It's interesting. Even like 5-6 years ago, some of the tools that we were building is now something I pay $10 a month for, and just anyone can use it. It's wonderful. I mean, but it really changes the landscape as far as the talent, the skill set you need to be able to build it, right? But then that opens up a whole nother world of now you have marketers, now you have agency owners being able to effectively touch and deal with this part of their business where before they really had very little control over it.
Yeah. I mean, you even look at like, I mean, how much work would go into building like a homepage or a couple of pages, 10 years ago. Yes, you can build pages for, you know, with $10 tools, but you might have to, you know, now you're creating like lots of different versions of the same page and you're creating a lot more like throwaway stuff. So it's like, yes, it's gotten easier, but it's also like simultaneously gotten like way more difficult, like all at the same time. Right. Yeah. So I think it's interesting that I know like a few years ago, people thought like all these DIY tools were going to really like make web designers like,
you know, obsolete,
but really it just meant that, you know, now we're creating way more content, way more pages, and you still have to have marketers and web designers and all that good stuff.
Right. It's kind of like the promise of, I guess, work hours as well. It's like all this technology is going to make us work less because we can be more effective. Well, we're much more effective, but we're working more because we're always connected, right? Like I remember days when if you wanted approval on something, you sent out a mail. Right, you sent out a physical package. It was going to be a week before you got approval on that or not. And now you need approval in like an hour because that's what the clients have come to expect. So, But this has changed the way that we're able to not only build websites and to build our marketing, but also to understand our marketing. And that's something that you have a lot of experience with. I think that you teach a lot in YouGurus, which is how do you then score and understand what your marketing is doing and how people are coming down that lead generation funnel.
Yeah. I mean, I think looking at, you know, what number, I know this whole podcast is about data, so we can,
I like maybe geeking out. You may or may not know this. I like geeking out on data. So,
well, I think that, you know, it's kind of like, well, you can track so many things these days, but what do you track? I mean, what is important? And also, how do you read that? I know from a personal story that a few years ago, I was having a really hard time figuring out why our business wasn't profitable. And, you know, my first inclination was to look at where we were spending money and figure out if we can cut the spend or cut expenses and looking at, you know, ad spend and thinking like, oh man, we're spending too much money on ads. And then we cut our ad budget. And then it was like a month goes by and our revenue starts declining and 2 months goes by. And not only are we doing less revenue, we're like actually way less profitable because we're not spending on something that actually was, you know, the solution. I remember coming to my business partner at the time and I said, oh my gosh, dude, like we cut our ad spend to be more profitable. We should have tripled our ad spend. And he kind of looked at me like, what? Like, why would we spend more money? And it comes down to like understanding the numbers in your business. Like our gross profit margin required us to spend more. We needed to be bringing in more clients because of our gross profit margin, our fixed expenses, and some of these things. And so like you can even take a number like ads and think that that's an expense and we can save money by cutting that number. But, you know, if you really get into the data, you realize, oh, we should be tripling the spend, not cutting it in half, which I think a lot of people can be uncomfortable with. Cause it's the data tells you this is what you should do, but people have like risk tolerance and you know, what should you really be doing? And I know I've told a story to other agency owners and even help people with that, where they go, you know, I'm like, oh, you know what you need to do here is you need to spend, you know, 8 times as much on advertising. And they go, wait, what? You know, because I'm like, well, yeah, because you're using ads and you're getting a client every 6 months through ads because you're just not spending enough. And if you guys want a client every month, like you need to just, you know, if that's what you want, then you gotta put the fuel in. You gotta make it happen.
And that's where that cost per acquisition, because especially with an agency and even with a SaaS, with anything, you have a lot of costs that you have to spend every month, whether or not you get a client. And a lot of those costs you can't remove, right? You can't remove your server costs. You can't remove a lot of your tool costs. You can't remove your employee costs without scaling down. So people look at an easy to cut number, which is those ads, and they cut that because it's easy to cut. But it's the lifeblood. It's the engine that's bringing in new customers.
Or I think too, also having like an unrealistic expectation on how much it costs. I mean, if we're just talking like the marketing side, right? Like how much does it cost to acquire a customer? You know, I've met agency owners who think that they should spend, you know, $300 on Google to earn a client. And I'm like, well, how much is that client worth to you?
Right.
Like, well, yeah, lifetime, $50,000. I'm like, okay, like in what world can you take $300 and insert into a vending machine and get 50 grand in return, right? And so sometimes it's like knowing what numbers to look at, but also setting realistic expectations for ourselves. And I personally think in terms of like, if I'm experimenting with a new marketing funnel, I'm typically willing to experiment. You know, I got to set my threshold, but I'm usually willing to experiment with about 30% of like the first 12 months of revenue for us as being a services business. And so, you know, before I start to say, well, this is probably not working how I want it to, and I should probably, you know, make some changes, but ultimately I want to get to like a 10% type of, you know, only 10% of my revenues, you know,
right.
In terms of customer acquisition costs, like that number kind of feels good to me.
Yeah, and I think that looking at e-commerce and the people who post about Facebook ads and Google ads and stuff, I think that skewed expectations because a lot of e-commerce places are like, oh, we get leads for $5. And so even agencies or SaaS companies are like, well, why aren't I getting a lead for $5? It's like, well, you're not selling a $10 product, right? But it does skew it because I look at my own numbers and I'm like, why is it costing me $300 to get a lead? Like, is that good? Is that bad? I don't know, right? And it's finding until you know your return on ad spend, that number is really meaningless because you don't know especially at the beginning, what you should be getting your leads for.
One of my clients came to me and said he kind of had a similar situation. They were earning clients on using Facebook ads in particular for about $500. And he's like, oh, this is working. So what else can I do to market my business? Like, we're getting about a client every month or every other month, mm-hmm. we're spending about $500 to $1,000 a month. And I was like, well, yeah, you could go do some other marketing, or can you just increase your spend by 10 times? This seems to work, right? Yeah, this seems to work. Can you just do more of this, right? And I think sometimes that we think that that's not a question that's being asked, right? And I think that I have a blog post from years ago on my personal blog that's, try to find the ceiling, right? And that's something that we've done with our marketing funnel by running the marketing funnel by the numbers and say, okay, generally speaking, we're earning a client for, $1,000 and we're spending $20,000 a month on ads. Can we spend $40,000 a month on ads and maintain that $1,000 a month, customer acquisition cost? Mm-hmm. And then actually doing that and seeing what happens. And sometimes it has worked for us. Sometimes it hasn't worked for us, but having that very much like run by the numbers kind of mindset, right? Like, what do you need to hit to achieve your goals and then work backwards from there.
And then how do you decide when something isn't working? I mean, it's easy. I think it's easier to see when something is working. Oh man, I need to triple this or quadruple this. But especially at those early days, how do you then say, hey, these numbers just aren't going to work out forecasting 3-6 months down the line?
Yeah. I mean, we had a product that a program that we were selling. It was kind of a 10-week accelerator. And we were in that situation. We were earning a client for about $1,000 a client. We had two sales reps on the phone. We were pushing about 25K per month in ad spend. We hired a second rep. And I think the assumption was if we're going to double everything, like we're going to have to double the ad spend. Mm-hmm. And we doubled the ad spend and we saw our customer acquisition cost go from about $1,000 to about $1,500 and then to about $1,600. And eventually we were spending about $2,000 to acquire a customer. And so, for us, it came down to the numbers, like what was our gross profit per client?
Right.
And for that specific program, it was our gross profit per client was about $1,500 per 10-week bootcamp. And so when the customer acquisition cost started to,
get up to that point
where we were like, hey, we're actually selling, we're selling this thing, but we're not actually making any money on it. I mean, I think that that's, you have to take a really hard look at that. So you either have to come up with a new product or service to sell on the back end of that or not. So I think that, it's just what's your risk tolerance, I guess. Some people, when I say, hey, we spent 50K a month promoting our business on Facebook, they kind of feel like they're like, oh my gosh, I could never imagine spending that much. But it's like, well, yeah, but when you're signing 50 clients a month, like, it works until it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you're exactly right. You got to look at that long-term return on ad spend over that without looking at the 20-day, 30-day, but actually that long-term lifetime value of how much each of these leads are going to be worth. It was interesting. WP Engine had, I think Jason Cohen, I hope I'm getting his name right, but he was giving a talk about Facebook ads, and he said he had to scale back his Facebook ads because he had it so dialed in that his support was the bottleneck. He couldn't have good enough support with more ad spend, right? He was at the limit of how he could support these people, but he knew for every dollar he put in, he was going to get X dollars back. Like he had it that dialed in, but the breaking point was not the conversion. It was being able to support all the new customers he'd be bringing in, which I always thought was interesting that there can be kind of third tier issues that yeah. play into that.
I mean, we had, we had, when we first started increasing our ad spend, I could literally open up my salesperson's calendar and I would start seeing appointments getting booked out, you know, 2 and 3 weeks out into the future. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks from somebody being on a webinar to talking to a salesperson, like we could immediately say, well, that's probably a bad situation to be right. in, where you aren't having sales conversations. You know, somebody was all hot to move. They're like, oh, this is great.
And then you got to wait a month.
You know, you got to wait a month, right? Like that's not good. And then you can all of a sudden you try to solve that problem by doubling your sales capacity, and then you don't realize that, at least for us, that second salesperson for us, like we didn't have enough capacity for two reps. We had enough capacity, or we had enough demand for like 1.2 reps. Mm-hmm. So we brought a second person on, and all of a sudden now, you know, we cut one of our salesperson's commissions by, you know, 60%, because now right. we're, you know, and then it was like, okay, now we got to rebalance this out. And then even our staffing, the capacity, if we sold too many of our service, the team could not support it, right? So right. then all of a sudden we started to enroll people, not for like this boot camp, but for next month's boot camp. Then it was like 2 months from now, then it was like 3 months from now. So you can definitely create new problems by trying to pursue growth, right?
Yeah. And they always say that's a good problem to have, but it's still a problem that you have to solve. So
yeah, I mean, look, if you've ever, you know, had to refund like tens of thousands of dollars because yeah. you've oversold something. I mean, you know, I don't know if I'd call that a good problem. So, I mean, I think you could easily create like bad problems, but yeah, it's probably a better problem having revenue flowing through your business than, and at least having an opportunity to serve right. the revenue versus like literally looking around and going, I don't have any customers, right? I mean, yeah. I don't have any leads. I don't know where to start. At least you can kind of, you can figure out how to solve fulfillment problems maybe a little easier than a general marketing problem.
Yeah, exactly. So shifting gears a little bit, you talk a lot about scorecards and why that's important for businesses. Can you dive a little bit into that?
Yeah. So like, if you're talking about like a weekly scorecard, so something mm-hmm. that you can, as a leader of the business, look at and say, you know, is there something going on? You know, is my business working for me? Is it not working for me? Or is it not working for the company? I think a lot of people get scorecards wrong and they think a scorecard is some kind of dashboard mm-hmm. that is tracking everything in your business. And I tell our clients that a scorecard should work just about the same as your dashboard in your car, right? There's mm-hmm. basically like three or four numbers that tell you more or less everything's heading in the right direction. Now, yes, you can pull over and run a diagnostics on your car. You can take it to the shop, they plug in something and then they get the big deep dive, right? But like mm-hmm. if you're driving along and all of a sudden, you know, you've got your foot on the gas, you hear the engine revving, but you're not moving, right? Like your speed is, you know, your revs are going up, but the car's mm-hmm. not actually moving. Like that probably tells you, you know, oh, maybe the car's not in reverse or it's not in drive.
Right.
If you then put it in drive and you rev and it's like, vroom, 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 but it's not moving, like that's probably a problem that's above my, you know, is the parking brake on, right?
Right.
So if you kind of look at those kind of top level things and you're still not able to figure out, then yeah, maybe you need to go and pop the hood, look at the deep dive, look at like numbers in detail, pulling up Google Analytics or pulling up your funnel analytics or pulling up, you know, wherever you track numbers in your business, like going deeper on stuff. But like every business owner should have that kind of, you know, car dashboard level scorecard that right. tells them one or two numbers around marketing, one or two numbers around sales, one or two numbers around fulfillment and delivery, one or two numbers around finance, right? So if you even look at your engine, you have about five or so, you know, you've got your gas, you've got your RPMs, you've got your speed, you've got your temperature. And really beyond that, it's like, you know,
everything else is superfluous.
Yeah, at least I'm not a car guy. So I'm not a car guy. So like anything beyond that, I'm going to go like, you know, oh, my carburetor is blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm like, okay, cool, dude. Like how much is it going to cost me to fix it? Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that I tell clients, look, if you have a scorecard in your team, if you're a multi-person team, then your scorecard really should be this thing where if you're out of the business and you're, you know, sitting on the beach and you're, you know, you're watching the waves and you're on vacation and the waiter comes up to you and hands you, you know, says, "Oh, sir, I have an envelope for you, Keith. You know, oh, by the way, I see your drink's a little empty. Would you like to order another drink?" Right. And you open the envelope. It happens to be your scorecard. And really, the scorecard should tell you, do I stay at the beach and order another drink, or do I have to go up to my room and start solving problems? Right.
Right.
That's really the binary of the scorecard. Right. Is it telling us that there are either no issues, everything's running fine, or there is an issue? It doesn't really have to tell you like what the issue is or what's causing it or why it's happening. I mean, all that kind of stuff. It should just tell you like there is a problem that needs further investigation.
Right.
So one of the most common mistakes I see people make with scorecards is they try to create a scorecard that literally will tell them like all the
diagnostics
in the business and what's going on. Right. So like common ones for marketing, it's like, you know, did you get any marketing qualified leads this week? You know, like how many did you get? Did you, if you got zero and you got zero last week and you got zero the next week, right?
Might have a problem. Empty,
right? Do we need to see like website traffic and clicks and webinar and
bounce rates?
Like it's like, did I get any leads, right? Like if you're tracking sales, like how many, you know, maybe if we want a leading indicator on sales, it'd be like how many proposals did we present? And more importantly, I mean, you could say how many deals did we win? I like to say how much revenue. Like how much revenue do we close in business this week? Because like number of deals and revenue together create a really nice like story, right? Did we get one deal that was worth 50K or did we get three deals worth 50K, right? I mean, that tells a little bit different story. And then I think in terms of like fulfillment is one of the ones that people always get kind of thrown off on of like, what do we want to look at on a high level? You know, missed milestones is missed milestones or deadlines a good one. We've been a big fan of implementing traffic lights. So, you know, what percentage of your clients are green, yellow, or red, and then put some definition around that. You could have from customer service, like average client rating after closing a ticket, using some kind of like either net promoter or happy face, neutral face, sad face. And then, you know, we had 97% happy faces, right? And then define some thresholds around that. And then financials, you know, total revenue generated in the last 30 days and cash balance, right? I mean, those are kind of your core six or seven numbers that really matter for the business, right? Do we have new business coming in the pipeline? Are we closing business? Are we making our customers happy? And do we have cash in the bank?
Right. And then I always find that, so the owner has the top level scorecard, and then kind of what you're saying, each department is also going to have scorecards for their specific things that they need to monitor, right? So you have someone who's at the very top, and then you have for the marketing department, the marketing head has their scorecard, and then they will dive deeper in, but they still need to have that scorecard to say, okay, is everything moving in the right direction or not?
Right. So if you are a company that has teams, then each team, whoever, if you have especially teams and somebody that's leading each of those teams, then yes, they should have a scorecard, and you really should have, everybody in your organization should have a number that they're trying to improve and work on. And together that should be, you know, coming up to like help the business move forward.
Yeah. And this is kind of one of the issues that I see happen a lot, especially, you know, we do analytics, we do dashboards, and I either see people say, I only need one number or I need 800 numbers. And how do you get the balance between those? And especially for things like you're saying, a scorecard to see how you're doing, but then also be able to dive in and say, okay, this is what's going wrong, but why is it going wrong? And how do we go deeper into that scorecard number, that's that non-performing number, to figure out why?
Yeah. I mean, look, I like to use the beach drink test as a good, like, you know, it's a good for a scorecard in particular, not necessarily a dashboard, but a scorecard. You know, does it tell you that something needs to happen? Is there an issue that needs to go to the score or down to your issues list as a team? And if you don't need the number, right? If every week you're tracking it, and you're going, oh, that's interesting, but you're not like whether the number goes up or the number goes down, you're not dropping issues to it and it's not changing your behavior at all, then I would just say, hey, we're not actually doing anything about this number. It's just kind of a nice to know.
Right.
And it doesn't need to necessarily be, you know, on this document, right?
Yeah.
For example, we had a time where profitability was really terrible and we were not maintaining consistent profitability. So part of our solution was to become aware of where we were spending money and what we were spending money on. So we started tracking like four or five numbers around our financials and what we were spending money on. Well, we worked on those numbers. We kept dropping issues. We kept dropping issues. And eventually we kind of like got the business to where it was actually a healthier, better run business. And, you know, after a while, we looked at all these numbers we were reporting on every single week and decided, hey, you know what? Like, maybe we don't need it. Like, we have our revenue and we have our profitability. Like, unless this gets out of line again, like, we don't need to track all these other numbers. Like, they serve their purpose. We can remove them off our scorecard. We can track revenue. We can track profitability. If it gets funky again, then we can go back to, you know, tracking these things and solving issues for it.
Yeah. Do you find that having too many numbers is more of a distraction?
Well, yeah. I mean, it just comes down to like, are you actually going to drop issues based on that number? Right?
Right.
If you're just looking at it because you're like, oh, I like to know this stuff, then, you know, then I think that too many numbers. You're also talking to somebody who my, I don't know if you guys know what Colby is, but the Colby assessment, my fact finder is a 3 out of 10. So I'm a simplify, if that makes sense. That's all you need to know. I like to, I like to know high level. I like to know, like, I like to get the summary. Whereas the, my old CTO that used to work for us, he was like a 9 on fact finder. So for him, you know, he needed, like, if something was going wrong in the business, like, he initiated his problem solving engine through finding the facts and like he had to deep dive the numbers. He would probably want 800. You know, whereas I want 3. I'm not sure if I can tell you which is right or which is wrong. I can just tell you that if you're somebody that needs a lot of information to make decisions, then you might want to have more on your scorecard. For me, I'd like to have less information and have more of that kind of
core value from it. Yep.
To make the decisions.
Yeah. I find, I haven't taken the assessment, so I don't know where I fall on it, but I find that too many things that I have to look at kind of makes me ignore all of them. So it's like, if I have to look at revenue and I have to look at this and I have to look at this and I have to look at this and I have to look, I'll look at the numbers and I'll say, those are some numbers. And then I'm pretty much done at that point. And nothing becomes actionable out of it because I'm trying to monitor too much stuff.
I mean, I think that, so one of the most successful like growth campaigns that I ever ran at our business was when I was able to simplify all of our problems down to one number. And that was, we were going from signing one client was our average. And I wanted to, per day. And I wanted us to sign 2 clients per day. And so I, you know, like for me as a leader, it was like, can we go from signing 1 client a day to 2 clients a day? And it looks really simple. It's like, oh, on average, if you look at the last 6 months, we've been signing about 1 client a day. You know, how do we go from 1 to 2? So in my marketing meetings, how are we going from 1 to 2? In our sales meetings, how are we going from 1 to 2? Can we do that? Can we actually have one, you know, one salesperson go, you know, selling one? Their history says, I've been selling about 1 client per day. You know, so can we do things to have that one person double their selling effectiveness, or do we actually need to have 2 salespeople, right?
Right.
And how we fulfill our product and our service offering, right? Right now, if I went to my team and I'm like, hey, you guys are, you know, onboarding and delivering value for about, you know, 20 clients a month, about 1 client a day. What happens if we double that from 20 to 40? You know, and so it was like that really simple idea that we could rally the company around and like create like a t-shirt, like from 1 to 2, right? And like when we hit that, right? And we have a couple of days where we're selling like 2 a day and it's like you can see the results and you can just see people rally around a really simple idea.
Right.
So I think if you have things that are like cross department and cross team and it's like about the company growing, I think the more people that are involved, the simpler the idea has to be. So if you guys as a company are trying to move 17 different numbers, like it's really difficult right now. If you can, if you can figure out how to level it up to like one idea that's really simple, and then kind of delegate out some smaller chunks of like, okay, marketing obviously does have to work on 2Xing traffic and 2Xing like lead acquisition and 2Xing the amount of appointments that are coming through, right? Like they might have five or six numbers that feed up into that goal. But I think as a leader, you probably need to figure out if you have multiple people, like how do you distill this down to some simple, you know, choose which numbers are going to be important, which ones aren't, and, you know, and then get people to rally around improving those things.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you look at just that, let's take that one goal, which is go from one to two. As it goes to each department, the number of goals to accomplish that change, we still have that end goal, but for, or increase, because in marketing, there's going to be a number of goals. Okay, let's increase traffic. Let's make sure that conversion rate increases. So everyone has multiple things they have to do to accomplish this one goal. But if you start with even just five goals, now everyone has five times as many things that they have to do.
Yeah.
Like it, at the top level, it seems simple. It's like, we're just doing these three things. But then each section, there's so many more things that have to be done for each of those that it becomes unwieldy. And no one knows where to concentrate.
And I think that for us, that campaign in particular, I mean, I think the lesson for me as leader, as CEO was, you know, having that simple kind of rallying cry, something that could be distilled down into like from one to two, which was, you know, nice, right? Like, you know, there was, and I remember at the time of setting that goal, like, you know, there was a lot of friction amongst the teams. Like, well, we're not going to be able to do that. That's an unrealistic expectation. And I'm like, well, we're obviously doing one a day. Like, that's not impossible. So why is two, like, you know, and doing one a day is kind of arbitrary. Like, how did we end up there? Like, I don't know. Like, we just, that was what the business was that we grew to. Like, why can we not get to two, right? And so I think that having that kind of simple idea, I mean, even at a department level, like how do you as a leader in marketing, for example, like how do you get your, you know, what you're ultimately trying to, you know, move the needle on down to one idea? And I think if you focus on those types of measurables for a period of time, like a 90-day kind of focused, you know, here's our strategic plan for the next 90 days, like our whole goal as a company is to move the needle on this one number. In the past, a couple of numbers that we've done similar things to around retention, like a rolling 30 on, you know, what, how are we churning, you know, 1% of our customers every 30 days or three, you know, at one point it was like, we had a churn problem. We were churning like 5% of our clients every 30 days. It was like, what? Like this is, you know, like literally a year from now, we're going to have almost 100%, you know, new clients a year from now. That's crazy. Like, how do we solve that problem? And go from like five down to, you know, even five, from five to four and then four to three. And then, you know, how do you set reasonable goals and just focus on that one thing? And if we can solve the retention problem, feel good about that by moving the needle on that number, then we can then move on to other aspects of the business. And so I think it can be hard to try to want to fix everything all at once, but to also realize that, you know, I think even though people can work hard, they still need those simple ideas to communicate across multiple teams.
And when you're working with coaches or agency, or when you're working with agencies, how do you help them decide? Because as agency owners and or any business owner, they're like, we have 800 things we have to focus on. Or even taking one idea, like let's improve our retention for new customers. There's 100 different ways to do it. So how do you help them kind of understand this is where you want to focus?
Yeah. So we'll do a basic assessment around our model, which is attract leads, win deals, delight clients. So think about it as like marketing, sales, fulfillment. Okay. And so what we usually do is have every 90 days, have our clients do a self-assessment on those different systems in their business, which is the burning building right now. And depending on where you are, like, it kind of rotates and changes like at different sizes. Like you don't just, you don't solve as a business owner, you don't solve marketing like once and for all. It's like, not like, oh, we finally built the one funnel we'll have until
we're done
to this part, right? We're done, right? It's like you solve that issue and then that's kind of like it, you get to a new level of growth. I mean, hopefully that's the plan. And then you're going to have that same problems going to come up in a different way. And so we have people assess like on a simple one to five, like, hey, how is your business performing in terms of attracting leads? Are you attracting leads and nurturing those leads into opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And hey, if sometimes when the people first come to us, they're like, that's a one or a two, right? And then they start working on their marketing systems. So once we solve the marketing problems, then we have to start looking at sales, right? Then we have to start looking at fulfillment and say, okay, there's numbers that are involved in all these. So usually with our clients, I say, look, focus on one area of the business every 90 days in terms of like, this is the thing that in terms of working on the business, not in the business, we're just going to look at this one thing for, you know, we're going to put 80% of our time or more into this kind of one area of our business. Because the reality is that, like, if you don't do that, you know, you kind of like pseudo solve the problems across the business. Like, you're not really making measured progress on that stuff, right?
Right? You're doing is feel good. Yep.
Yeah. If marketing is your biggest problem, if you are not generating qualified leads as an agency owner and you kind of like do a couple of things, you're like, oh, maybe we'll post a couple things to our blog, like, or whatever, right? You're not making significant, like, you're not doing significant projects. Then, you know, maybe you get a couple of leads, you feel good in the short term, but you're not really like solving that problem long term. Versus you say, look, guys, we don't have a marketing engine. We need to build a marketing engine. We need to find a traffic source. We need to invest time and money into that traffic source. We need to generate, you know, qualified leads in a systematic way, in a proven way, outside of referrals and word of mouth, right? Like, we that might take us 90 days. It could take us even 2 quarters of sustained effort to move the needle on that and go, okay, cool. We are now consistently getting leads outside of referrals and word of mouth, right? And then from there you can say, okay, now we have these leads coming into our system and now we can focus on sales. So like one of my clients, they had this problem. They didn't have a marketing engine. They were getting no leads outside of referrals and word of mouth. Took us about 6 months to build them up an engine. They were using Stages as kind of their primary way to build awareness and generate leads. And the number, thinking about simple numbers, was because they got about 5 to 10 leads off of a stage. And so it was like, all right, can you guys be on one stage a month? So they started thinking about their calendar as a pipeline. And they started booking themselves out 6 months for one stage a month. And they did this. And all of a sudden they were, you know, January on a stage, February on a stage, March on a stage. They kept booking out one month, each month they'd book out 1 month. And all of a sudden they're getting 10 leads a month. And it's like, they're getting so much opportunity, but they still weren't making money. Okay, cool. Well, at least we solved the marketing problem.
Solved one problem, right?
Now we've got this pipeline of leads coming in. Let's start working on that, right? And like, let's look at your offer. Let's look at your sales interactions. Let's look at this kind of stuff. And go, okay, well, let's start thinking about, you know, how many proposals are you presenting? That became the next number we looked at, was like, how many offers are you actually getting to offer, or are people, you know, disqualifying or whatever, right? So looking at those different numbers, but really helping them to say, what's the most important number to move the needle on in the next 90 days? And then just kind of like ignore everything else and then make some progress on that and then move to the next thing, right? This client in particular, they have started to, they worked on the sales component, and then all of a sudden they're having like these huge revenue months. And now the text messages I'm getting are, oh my gosh, dude, we're so overbooked. We have so much business. We have, yeah, how do we, you know, so now we're working on things around like, you know, delegation, their time, you know, effectiveness, the agency's capacity, the pipeline. Like, we're working on more of those fulfillment things. But it's like, you know, we're not having that conversation again about the marketing. They kind of have an engine. They're running it. They're investing in it. But at some point, if they hire 3 people, then
they can start to solve that problem. Right.
The cookie monster is going to get hungrier, and they're going to need twice as many leads. Right. So it's like, it's a very cyclical process, and I think most entrepreneurs that have been in the game long enough know that it is something that's, you know, just because you solve your lead gen problem today, if you guys grow to, you know, from a 6-figure business to a 7-figure, like, now you have that problem on steroids.
But having that as an engine makes it much easier to then scale up later because you have a foundation. I think that's really 2 parts of it that a lot of people don't get. One, viewing that whole marketing, that whole system as discrete steps, right? So you have your lead acquisition, you have your nurturing, you have your closing the deal, and then you have your fulfillment. And viewing it as very discrete steps, people look at the whole thing and say, like, I'm not getting enough customers, right? And they never break it down. And the second one is kind of what you're saying. If you don't focus for a quarter on a single project, you're not going to build an engine. You're going to try something and it's either going to work or not work. And it's not going to work. You're like, well, that didn't work. Move on to the next thing, right? Instead of trying to build this thing and make it repeatable and so that you can go off to the next step and be confident that this first step is going to keep running and keep working.
I mean, you know, Keith, I had, you're spot on, right? I mean, I literally have just been going through this myself with a new, we get a lot of our leads through webinars, and I launched a new webinar. It was an evergreen webinar, which I don't do a lot of that stuff. I do a lot of live. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is, again, thinking about numbers and pipelining, it's like, if I'm not doing live, then we're not spending money on ads, which can look good in the short term, but then we know we don't get clients, right? So our team sat down and said, okay, well, when you're not, you know, I had a big event in fourth quarter. So we were doing our big event and there were weeks going by where I wasn't doing live webinars, which means my pipeline is just, you know, it's not getting that injection or whatever. So we created this evergreen webinar and, you know, we launched it, spent a few $1,000s in promoting it. And it was like goose egg, like zero. And I was also sharing this with my community in real time. So I was like, hey guys, like, you know, I'm going to teach you everything about, you know, generating leads and marketing. I must always get this perfect, right? Mm-hmm. I must always get it right. And so we were kind of pulling back the curtain, sharing this with the community in real time. And we spent several $1,000s, got literally zero leads. It was like, okay,
wow.
You know, well, we're not going to throw the entire idea out. Let's look at where things are happening. So we looked at it and said, okay, well, we've got people registering and we're spending about $13 per registration on the webinar, which is comparable to our live. So I was like, okay, the ad, the offer on the landing page is everything's all fine. Things. Yeah. So far, everything's good. So we're not screwing with that, right? But like what's happening once somebody gets to the actual webinar page is we started looking at some analytics on there. People weren't staying on the page. It was a 60-minute webinar. They weren't staying on the page and they were, you know, they were bouncing off. So we recreated that video as a 20-minute video. It was, who knows if this is the right answer, but we just threw that out there, relaunched the funnel, tried to see if it would work. We found that people now were staying on the page, but they still weren't applying. So we, okay, so let's, what's going on here? And we found out that our application page was taking like way too long to load. It was taking like 15 seconds to load. So we're like, okay, so we got like, we're driving traffic. We're getting registrations to the right price. Mm-hmm. People are now watching the content, but they're not applying. So how did a developer go in there, change some code around, streamline that page? And, you know, now we're getting applications for, you know, we got our first application. It was funny. I was out with my wife. We were on like a date and like I saw like a lead come across. I'm like, I got to check this out. Like, is this from my paid funnel? Like, I don't know. Right. I went in and looked at it. I was like, okay, this got attributed to that funnel. And I was like really excited. Like, it was proven. It went from this idea that was, we were in exploration to now proven, right? And that's kind of my first threshold, right? Is like, is something proven? Does it work?
Right.
The next threshold is it repeatable? So then it was like, the next threshold was, will we get a second lead? And we did, right? And then it became, is it predictable, right? Are we getting a lead for about the same number of spend? And then after we got about six leads, it was like, all right, we're spending about $300 per lead. So I can literally watch, you know, and we're spending $200 a day. So about every day and a half,
we get a lead,
right? Yep. And I'm like, okay, cool. Right. So then it's like, okay, is it proven? Is it repeatable? Is it predictable? And then the final is it scalable? Right. So that's actually the stage with this funnel that we're in right now is going to my ad team now and going, okay, let's double. And if this, we're gonna 2x the spend, just all things holding equal, 2x the spend, and does the model hold, right? Does it keep performing? And I think at that point, with any kind of marketing engine, I think things get kind of interesting, right? Because then you double it, and then you're like, okay, it's still, if I'm still getting $300 a lead,
so let's double it again.
Double again, right? Yeah, and then until we break it, right?
It's like roulette. It's like let it ride. how long can we let it ride?
Thank you for comparing my marketing strategy to roulette. I'm not feeling better, Keith.
No. But it's true. It isn't chance, but it's interesting that when you get to a certain point, you would expect, okay, it works at $100. Why is it not working at $200? And it's hard to figure out. It's like, okay, all I did was increase the spend. Did I run out of people? Am I targeting the wrong audience? Like, what was the difference between that $100 to spend and $200 to spend that changed the results so much? And that's always the frustrating part to me, because that's the one part of the marketing funnel I can't see. I can see the results, but I don't, because the algorithm is a black box, right? And it's very difficult to understand why $100 works and $200 doesn't.
Well, it is complicated. What we last summer we were running an evergreen funnel for a while, and one of the things that we found was we were getting really bad performance, like right out of the gate. But within 3 weeks, we saw people that came through the funnel through our nurture system and other things, right? Retargeting, whatever. Like within 3 weeks, we found that we had like the numbers looked a lot better. Mm-hmm. So the initial, like, you know, somebody clicks on an ad, fills out a form, watches a webinar, applies or registers as a lead or buys or whatever, right? Like it was that whole thing, for us to really settle the data out and figure out, like, is this cohort of people that were putting an ad in front of the first time, you know, are they taking action? Took about 3 weeks. So when we looked at the reports on a week by week basis, we were actually getting like really bad insights into whether or not something was working. And because I went back to my team and I'm like, these numbers look terrible, but we're getting all these, like, I could see the revenue coming in. Like we were having like these banner months for our business. We were having like record sales months. But when I looked week by week, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Like it looks like we're paying so much money per application or per like registered lead. And when we looked at it and started cohorting instead of 1 week intervals and 3 week intervals on ad spend, all of a sudden we started seeing a much different picture, which was interesting, right? We said, okay, well, that means if we double ad spend today, we need to be willing to wait 3 weeks on those dollars that we spent to really figure out, like, are the numbers holding? Which is just a total, like, I mean, it messes with your mind around, like, you know, you're like, oh man, like now I gotta wait, you know, I gotta wait 3 weeks, but at least now I can say in 3 week intervals, I can make decisions. And I think that's probably another important thing on data is just deciding, like, kind of deciding the rules of your roulette game, if you will. Like, what game are you playing? Like, if it is, okay, we were not going to make a decision on this for 3 weeks, then am I okay with spending this amount of money every day for 3 weeks, right? Because I'm going to just be watching, like, you know, I call it the Mark Zuckerberg Yacht Fund. I mean, we're talking about like Facebook today. I mean, the Google guys, like, I mean, it's all the same, right? It's like, are you able to maintain something? Are you willing to, do you have that risk tolerance? One of my clients told me that I was sharing numbers about our Facebook funnel, and he said, Brent, you're acting like you can just throw $1,000 at something and like it's, you know, he's like, if I spent $1,000 on Facebook, like my wife would divorce me or something. Like, well, okay, like when we first got in advertising, you know, our threshold was about $500, you know, we spent $500 one month and then kind of looked to see how things went, and then $500 the next month. Like, we could spend $500 every month indefinitely, be a little bit less profitable, but it wasn't like it was going to take us out of business, right?
Right.
Whereas if you're spending, you know, $50,000, and, you know, like, do you have that? You know, what's kind of your tolerance? If you screw up at that level, do you have the bandwidth or the war chest to survive something like that? And some people do, and some people don't.
And especially in the services business, where you do have a longer time to acquisition, a longer time to getting that revenue back, you have to be very aware of, okay, I know I can spend $50,000 in ads and get it back, but it's going to take me 6 months to do it. By the time I get that first $50,000 back, I've already spent, what is that, $300,000, right? So I have to make a calculation there.
Right. Well, I mean, so our lead funnel, you know, just to share we typically, it's like, a certain percentage of our leads will come in right off the spend, right off the top, within 3 weeks of ad spend for to a lead. It typically average within 3 weeks. We pretty much know from that initial kind of warm, hot group that we're actually, that not only signed up for a webinar, but applied or engaged us in our sales process, A good portion of those, like, we know whether they closed or not within about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then there's all the other people that take longer. And that's kind of where our organic marketing kind of comes into play. But I mean, we have people that are buying, you know, 18 months after mm-hmm. initial opt-in or whatever. And so I always try to make our marketing engines work off of the first pass from a dollars and cents perspective. And then we still get that other stuff over time. But we've got 6 weeks. So if I'm not marketing my business and I'm not, you know, and I need revenue yesterday, mm-hmm. no matter how hard I kick and scream, it's going to take me 6 weeks from ad spend. You take it and say, okay, well, what if it takes us another 2 or 3 weeks to ramp up and do the creative and do the launch? If it takes us another 2 months to prove a new campaign ahead of that, you know, you're talking about from, you know, oh, crud, we need some clients to signing up consistent number of clients. It could be 3, 4, 5 months, right? And so that's something that I think is, it's a hard pill to swallow, right? If we have mm-hmm. not, if we've neglected our marketing and we're not doing this stuff, there's this idea of pipelining. And, you know, when you're doing activities today, it's going to benefit you at some point in the future. Like, you can't just, like, you know, one day wake up, I need clients today, therefore I'm going to, you know, I'm going to build a marketing engine today and get clients tomorrow. It's just not how it works.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what you want, then you need to go into small dollar e-commerce, right? Not into services or SaaS. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, even then it's getting hard. But it's, yeah, you're exactly right. And it's something that we saw internally as well, where we had ads running and we weren't seeing return in 2 weeks. And we're like, ah, we're just going to shut it off. We got all the, then we started getting all this revenue. They're like, hey, this is great. And then exactly 3 weeks later, they all dry up again. And we're like, wait a minute. And we tried it again and we see the exact same way. It's like, okay, all right, we see what's going on here. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Brent, thank you so much. I want to, if you were to give advice to someone who's, and I think you've given a lot already, but looking to find the first place to dive in and really improve their lead gen as far as, like, on a strategic level, what advice would you give?
I mean, I think the most important thing in terms of improving on lead gen is knowing who you're targeting. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the first question I ask everybody. Some people call that niche or vertical or horizontal or whatever, but I think if you're not sure of who you're going after, figuring out where they are is really difficult. Impossible. If you know who you're going after, I think figuring out where to look for them becomes way easier. And then from there, you can get really specific about, like, what are those channels that you're going to use to reach them? Like, is it Facebook? Is it Instagram? Is it LinkedIn? Is it events? Is it blogs? Is it, you know, stages or whatever, right? I mean, those answers, I think, become more, a lot easier to find once mm-hmm. we kind of generally know who our ideal customer is, with some level of specifics.
Excellent. Well, Brent, thank you so much. Where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, they can check us out at ugurus.com. That's ugurus.com. Or if there is somebody that's listening that is an agency owner that needs help with anything that I've talked about, I mean, feel free to shoot me an email, brent@ugurus.com. Happy to help out anybody from Keith's audience or provide any insights I can around these problems. Happy to help.
Definitely. And we'll have those links in the show notes. Thanks again, Brent.
Absolutely. See you, Keith.